Welcome, everyone. My name is Justice Malala. I feel like I'm the cat that got the cream. My panel is very special. It's very esteemed. I'll introduce you to them in a second. I just wanted to say, in looking at the papers this weekend, I was struck by a press conference held by Business for South Africa on Thursday. In this press conference, the leaders of business in our country said they had met with President Ramaphosa. They had said to him, look, we want to help save Johannesburg. So I sat there thinking, wow, this is quite amazing. President Ramaphosa, who lives just down the road from where we are here, had realized a few months ago that Johannesburg is falling apart. And so he had come up with something called a bomb squad that would help the mayor to do his job. And from then on, I thought, okay, so the bomb squad is there, business is going to come in, and of course the mayor and his executive are there to do their jobs. And I thought, why are three different teams of people doing the same job? So tonight we're going to talk about Mwele Tumbeki, about the topic that you suggested, can business save South Africa? And I'm going to take issue with you about that topic because I'm not quite sure that it's the right one. So I'd like to have this conversation in a very free-flowing manner. Interrupt me, interrupt each other, but don't have a big fight. And let's see what we can do with it. My guests are Piet Leroux. Piet is the Chief Executive Officer of Sakeleha, and he's very vocal on all manner of issues, and you can find him online, on YouTube, and so forth, talking about some of them. Next to him is one of my own heroes, one of my intellectual leaders, Mwele Tumbeki, who's a businessman, he's an author, he published one of my books, and he's a political, well-known political economist who has very original thoughts on all sorts of things that we do. I grew up in Hammanskraal, and my hero was Herman Mashaba, one of South Africa's great entrepreneurs, founded Black Like Me and a whole bunch of others, and is the leader and founder of Action SA, also a former mayor of this fantastic, great city that needs three sets of hands to save it today. Finally, Professor Bonang Mohale, many of you will know him. He's a chair of Bidvest, chair of many companies, has been CEO of other companies, a great intellectual, and I'm going to plug your upcoming book. It's coming out in 2 months, and I'm looking forward to reading it. So I'm going to start with you, Mwele Tumbeki. Can business save South Africa? Should business save South Africa?
Okay, well, business is the most trusted institution in South Africa. There's a survey by something called Edelman, which trust, and it measures what are the most trusted institutions in throughout the world, in many important countries in the world. And South Africa, of course, is one of the important countries in the world. So it's in there, in that mix. The most trusted institution in South Africa, according to this foundation, is business. The least trusted, one of the least trusted, is the government. So it's very, and the second least trusted is probably the political parties. So I know I'm sitting next to my friend who is a seasoned politician, so I don't want to upset him. But government and political parties are the least trusted institutions in South Africa. So that is one. The second thing is that business in South Africa is South African owned. It's owned by South African citizens. One of the things that gets lost in our history, one of the outcomes of the sanctions movement, of the disinvestment movement, was that South African citizens bought branches of multinational companies. The result is that most of the companies in South Africa are owned by South African citizens. An example I can give is what we know as First National Bank. First National Bank was actually originally a British bank called Barclays Bank, but it was bought by a small South African merchant bank called Rand Merchant Bank, whose owners were Paul Harris, Laurie Dippener, G.T. Ferreira, Johann Rupert. So it's one of the biggest banks in our country is owned by South Africans. Now, I've lived in several African countries. South Africa is one of the few countries in Africa which totally controls its financial services sector, thanks to the disinvestment and thanks to the South Africans who bought the business. So our business in South Africa is in a position to play a very critical role in developing the country, because they are the owners of our businesses they live in South Africa. They have a vested interest in making South Africa work.
I'm going to stop you there. Bona Mohale and Pete, both of you are in business. Both of you conduct business. If I understand this properly, you're now being asked to vote for a political party. So you vote for Action SA. And from voting for Action SA, and you say, go forth and implement. Instead of doing that, now you have to give up secondarily your taxes, your time, your resources, your talent, to help him that do the job that he is supposed to do. Is that correct?
Yes and no. Yes, because we've got bigger problems than that. Because if wealth is an inevitable outcome of both hard work and enterprise, then every woman in Africa should be a dollar billionaire. And there's a role that business can play in that. Two, the reason why business is because of most social partners, labor, government, and civil society. Business is the most organized. Only business can understand this notion of project management, how to deliver mega projects on time, on budget, and in full. Lastly, it's because business, for the longest of time, has always been the biggest employer. So if you look at 2010 up until today, they still employ 16.5 million people. Government in all three spheres, 2.3 million people, now it's down to 1.3 million people. So if business is transformed, South Africa will be transformed. But business in and of itself can't just save South Africa, because remember, they are also party to agitating and orchestrating for state capture. The Steinhoffs of this world, the VBSs of this world. So there's good business and that's not so good business. My last point is, of course, there are conditions. Because if business is going to save South Africa, it must start first by saving itself. And 31 years into democracy, business would have a better credibility to be listened to continue to be trusted, if they themselves had transformed so that this economy looks like us. Instead of talking about gender equality and pay parity, they should have been implementing it. 31 years later, there's 65 million of us. 52.5% are women, and yet women's representation in positions of leadership is less than 24%. African women, less than 4%. But they hold conferences, about closing the gender pay gap and making sure that it's much more reflective. Thank you.
Pete, do you agree, or would you like to come in on that point?
Well, let's zoom out a bit. South Africa is not unique in certain ways. It's a state. There are other states in the world. Many states have been badly run. The state South Africa is in is not the fault of business. It's the fault of political decisions. If you can say that business have done not enough to exert their influence and steer and correct, but the responsibility for the mess the country's in, no growth, unemployment, we should all have been richer across the board in the country. That's not the fault of business. But it's not unique to South Africa. Other governments have failed as well in the world. I think if there's one thing that we have an opportunity to perhaps rediscover, and this gets us back to the theme of what business could possibly do to get us out of this mess. Business won't do. Business alone is not going to get us out of this mess. But what it could do, businesses, is that I think we can start questioning that old adage that it's the responsibility of government to provide a good business environment. We live in modern times, and across the world, people have gotten used to saying that governments are responsible for making the business environment good. I think the next 10 years are about businesses internalizing that responsibility and saying that, well, we could outsource that to the government, but they haven't done a good job, and somehow we're going to have a very firm, frank, not always comfortable bit of boxing over the next few years to steer things in another direction. And in a way, I think business needs to become a greater counterbalance to some of the harmful policies that are going to get us into even a bigger mess over the next 10 years if we don't restore some balance.
Herman Mashaba, in 2016, you left your businesses. Before that, you left your businesses and you went into politics and you started running this city. Could you give us a bit of flavor about what that was like, what help you needed as a political leader, and how business helped and can help again nationally, at local level, and whether that's desirable at all, and what form that would take?
I think let me upfront obviously declare my capitalist wood, because I was born a capitalist and I'm unapologetic about this. If you want to make Herman Mashaba happy, put him in an environment where he makes money. Doing politics for me, it's actually some kind of punishment, but it's a kind of punishment. It's a kind of punishment I'm prepared to endure for the sake of my country. I come from, 40 years of business and the last, 6-7 years in politics. I had the privilege and immense privilege of having the opportunity at the same time to run for 3 years, run the city of Johannesburg. And in the 3 years, uncovered 35 billion rands of fraud and corruption. 35 billion rands. And some of the cases as clear as daylight. And I think what is actually quite painful for me to see the role of big business in the schemes, working with ANC leadership. So if anyone now tells me today that we need business to rescue this country, I'm beginning to wonder what we mean. I think business is absolutely very crucial, very critical, and I hope we get an opportunity later on. I can really share with you how I worked with business to revive that city. I'm sure you're aware when I was the mayor, I went on a massive unpopular project of reclaiming that city, expropriated 154 buildings from criminal syndicates, gave them to the private sector on long-term leases. Those 154 buildings were going to yield an investment in the city of about 32 billion rands, creating 22,000 permanent jobs during the construction phase, creating in the history of this country 14,000 housing units. Unfortunately, because of big business, quite concerned about my unrelenting and my pursuit of corruption. Big business worked with dark forces to remove me because probably some people take me to be a stubborn person. When I'm faced on something, I don't leave it. I was hell-bent on unearthing this corruption and get people involved in this corruption to be prosecuted. And dark forces decided with the ANC that I must be removed. Unfortunately, they did not realize that I wasn't born yesterday. I'm a big gambler. I was born a gambler, you know, and I've got my ears. And came across this dark forces secret meetings to remove me. And I then decided to move because being a mayor was the last thing in the world I want. So what I'm obviously trying to really illustrate to you that South Africa does not need business to rescue this country. We need a conducive government that can create a fair platform and a government that believes in social justice. I entered politics because of the inequality not really seeing advancement of our country and the mismanagement. So I think as far as I'm concerned, big business has got a role to play. There's absolutely no doubt about this. But South African big business does not have this credibility that Dr. Mueletsi has spoken about. They've got issues with them. They've played a key role in the corruption of the ANC that we are seeing today. And that needs to really be corrected and it needs to really be faced head on. Some of us who started business during the dark days of our country's history, some of us who helped our activists during the dark days, and obviously, then 1994 came, people with big purses came and corrupted. When we were helping...
I'm going to stop you there. And ask, you're a representative of business. Professor Mohale, you have been your entire life involved in business, from Otis to Shell to Bidvest. It's a very serious accusation that business aided and abetted in state capture and in other forms of malfeasance in this country. And in fact, I might take it further and say what Herman Mashaba is saying is that you need to be cleaner before you can even say anything about helping out in this country.
I agree, absolutely. Because we destroyed a 150-year-old institution called Togard Hewlett because of greed. Because business, in simple English, for every corruptor, there's a corruptee. During the height of state capture, first 5 years, we stole 1.5 trillion South African rands. And that's two-thirds of what Edward Kiesvetter collects from business and individuals. In the 9 wasted years, we siphoned off on average, 20 billion just to the two Zubta families. Imagine where we'd be as a country, as a people. Now we were talking about we want to spend 700 million rand on having a conversation when all the problems of South Africa are known and well articulated, but also the solutions are well known and articulated. Can you imagine what 700 million could buy us? Now we are supposed to be excited that it's a deal, it's half price, it will be 458 million rand. 700 million rand could eliminate the 141 pit latrine toilets that are still in the province of Limpopo alone. 700 million could hire the 800 doctors, that have completed their studies in the province of Gauteng alone now are unemployed, suffering from mental health issues and period poverty. In fact, if Gauteng was an African country, it would rank number 7, biggest economy in Africa, bigger than the economy of Kenya and Tanzania. And what do? We play with it. We have 7 mayors in 6 years, all with the complicity of business. However, business still has an opportunity to really redeem itself, because what is needed is business need to be steered back, because what is needed today is incisive and decisive leadership that only business can provide, because business is not our second chance. It's our last chance.
I'm going to ask other business. All of you actually are business people here. So I'm going to start with you, Pete.
I think that's that interpretation is too simple. It probably suffers from too much of a lumping together of business in one category. It's undoubtedly so that business interests intermingled with political interests and contributed to the so-called 9 wasted years. But just as very bad, much of what the problems we're in was caused by the so-called 9 bad years, but in the how many years since, not much has improved except less obvious corruption, but the policies, the zero growth, we still have lots of problems. So that's not a problem of business corruption. So I'm also, even during the... there are people here who were more closely associated with the changeover between Mr. Zuma and Mr. Ramaphosa, but just as much as I suppose you can argue that some so-called business interests supported the Zuma side of that affair or the so-called 9 wasted years, just as much I think there was a large coalition of big businesses on the other end of that who contributed to a changeover. So I wouldn't say where we're in is business's fault, and I wouldn't say state capture is business's fault.
But he's right about the corruptor and the corruptee.
It's true, but that's not business's problem.
Whose problem is it when business people bribe Mwele Tsimbeki?
It's the corrupted people involved. Now, there was one party in charge at the time, so you can blame the party, but you can't blame business. Business was not involved. Maybe some businesses were, but just as much as some businesses were in part of the unwinding of that.
I would put it to you, it's global business, it's local business. I would say look at Goldman Sachs, look at Bain. All of them have paid more than $100 million fines in the U.S., and have paid nothing, have not been followed up yet. So it's business, that's just the global part of it. He mentioned the Zuptas. That's business.
Some businesses. It's like saying people caused state capture. Some entities, like the party at the time and some businesses, but you can't say business caused it.
I think you could say business was complicit in keeping quiet while this was going on. No?
No, I think that's too broad a brush.
No, actually, they didn't keep quiet. They participated.
but would you say all businesses participate?
Not all. No,
some are part of the unwinding of it.
It's like obviously coming out with a blanket accusation that all politicians are corrupt. What I'm saying is, even with business, I'm not really, I'm a businessman, I'm a capitalist, I declared that from the beginning. But if you look at the role that big business has actually played in corrupting ANC cadres, making them greedy, I think it's actually quite unfortunate. I mean, let me give you a practical example of the business that Ntate Moeletsi spoke about, these fantastic guys. Absolutely, I've got lots of respect for them. I think more than 20 years ago, with this BE or whatever, I was approached by a friend of mine, because I had a construction business already in the 80s. Started with a friend of mine, the first black engineer I met, Mr. Biana. I had money and I started him. We started our own construction business. He's the one who built my own factory in the 80s, 6,000 square meters, state of the art. So I had a little bit of experience over years in construction. And one of the businesses with this BE approached me to say, you know, we're looking for a BE partner coming out of liquidation. And obviously the bank is talking about the ones who bailed this business out. But management are the ones who approached me. But now, unfortunately, the same business is talking about, they preferred some ladies who had absolutely no knowledge whatsoever about business, but they were politically connected, highly, highly politically connected. I remember going to this meeting with my corporate advisors. We laughed about it when we left, because I had to close the meeting before Shane could finish having his coffee, because, I mean, I'd negotiated the deal with management, who wanted me because of putting in my own money into the business, and I had experience, and I was black to bring credentials into the thing. And we negotiated the price, which the main guys who, I mean, the bank that helped the white guys to restart the business, they offered a price to these ladies. They were just ladies, you know. And now I come in that I already know the price for the business. Then I go there, they come out with a completely 40% more for me to buy. And I said, no, guys, don't waste my time. So we walked out of the business, out of the meeting before we finished. Shane could even finish his coffee. And these are the things that started questioning right at the beginning of this BE. What is this BE all about? Is it about corruption? Is it about getting the right black people in? Because obviously I was probably not strongly politically connected, that's why. But obviously I ended up doing the deal when I walked out, and before, by the time I got to the office, management called me back and says, look, let's go and talk to those guys. We can't have the ladies as our partners. So, and missing someone who is coming out, the ladies were going to be funded by the bank. I was funding myself. These are the issues, practical things. I'm not really giving you something that has been taught at Oxford or at the Vets Business School. I'm telling you about the practical role of the business that they've actually played in corrupting these gullible politicians. So I think we need business to really play their role. We need an independent the law enforcement agencies, so that there must be consequences for wrongdoing, and that's something that unfortunately is missing in South Africa.
Mwele Tsimbeki, what Herman Mashaba was talking about is environment. Some of the panelists have spoken here about the job of government is to make sure that this young lady here, this gentleman, can start a business in an environment that's conducive to start a business in. You have, at the moment, the chair of business for South Africa, for example, is Adrian Gore of Discovery. At the same time, Discovery is taking this government to court and saying, you are making doing business in this country totally impossible for us because NHI is going to destroy what is little left of public health care. You can't run it anywhere. So why should business continue with this funding and this help of business, of government, when the very same government is responsible for many of the policies that make it difficult? A practical example of how that deal went down, and that is government policy that is making it difficult to do deals with this. Why should you continue to support people who make policy that is so bad? In fact, the question I'm asking you is, That party speaks about policy that I think will create more jobs and so forth in this country. Why not take your money as business and give it to that party to win instead of helping this party that doesn't provide water to the people of Coronationville to stay in power and say, I'll help you get some water in and so forth? That's a contradiction, isn't it?
Yeah, but Justice, parties are voted by the voters. They are not made by the people who give political parties the money. That's very important to understand. Hammond's political party is voted by the people of South Africa. It doesn't matter where he gets his money from. The people of South Africa vote for Action SA because Action SA goes to them with a manifesto and says, this is what I'm going to do for you when I get to power. And Herman has described what he did for the people of Johannesburg when he was the mayor of Johannesburg. That's why the people voted for him. So we have to distinguish between what is more important and what is half important, what's less important. Yes, you need money to run a party, but at the end of the day, why political parties get voted? They get voted because of the message that they are giving to the electorate and the promises they are making to the electorate. So it's not that they are being corrupted. The point is, at the end of the day, they are voted by the voters, and we have to accept that that is the choice of the voters. But let's also not try and think that the single largest problem in South Africa is corruption. The biggest problems of South Africa, as he has pointed out, are the economic policies of the state. That is the fundamental problems of South Africa. Corruption is a manifestation. It's a byproduct of the policies of the government and of the ruling party or now ruling parties.
So, as a member of BUSA, of BLSA, of Sakelega, you're asking me and my organization to send engineers, to send security experts to Eskom to help prop up the same government that you've just condemned so signally.
I'm totally against Business for South Africa running the railways. It's not their business. That is state property. If the state fails to run them, which means the ANC government, then we must vote it out. Not for business to run. You see, that's where the corruption starts.
Hold on. Now that gentleman over there was one of the people who sat with the president and said, we will help fix logistics, meaning Transnet, correct? Were they not supposed to do that?
No, I'm against it. I disagree with them, and I've said so. It is not their business. The railways are state asset, and there are constitutional and legal ways of running state assets. They are there in the law books. The private companies coming to run state-owned assets is wrong. We have to get rid of the ruling party that fails to run state assets and choose the parties that will run state assets. Business for South Africa and this business that are running the railways, that are running the ports, that it's not their job to run the ports. Or we privatize the ports, then that's a different matter. Then those companies that buy the ports and buy the railways, then they are accountable to their clients. But fudging the distinction between state property and private property is a driver for corruption. There has to be a clear distinction between what is state property and what is private property. His company, Black Like Me, is a private company. It hasn't got politicians and making an input in how to run it. He runs it himself. Him and his wife run that company. If the ANC takes over, the ANC inherited the railway system of South Africa, national, in state-owned. If they can't run it, then let them sell it. So business, I'm totally against what Business for South Africa is doing.
So if I go to Mdeni Station in Soweto and my train isn't running, and I can't get into town, so I have to pay three times more or five times more in a minibus taxi. How does business help government in this instance?
No, the government, we elected the government, the citizens of South Africa, to do, because they said this is what we were going to do. We were going to run the trains on time. We were going to do X, Y, Z. We're going to keep them clean. We were going to keep them safe. They came to us, the citizens, with that promise. Business is now covering up for their failure, but then it's interfering in politics and it's interfering in the choices of the voters. Because if these guys are unable to run the trains from Soweto, then let's find somebody else to run the trains, not the business who is not elected to run state property.
There's an interesting irony here that to the extent the state fails at what it promises to do, businesses appeal to try and help run the state enterprises. But in the same way, that the more the state fails, the more the state tries to run businesses. It seems like it's the wrong way around. I like the direction Mr. Mbeki is taking here. We need a cleaner line here with less government involvement in how businesses is run. And more accountability on the government, on the business side. Just on the question here, can business save South Africa? We must just be careful not to interpret this as the only way that business can make a contribution if it starts to run government functions on behalf of the government. Mm-hmm. I think there are ways in which, one of the ways in which businesses could, over the next few years, help in South Africa is by pushing back against government policy. If that's the main cause of our economic malaise, maybe that's the greatest contribution business could make. If we could, for example, undo three or four of the most harmful economic policies in this country, maybe that's even better than fixing the railways.
On the other hand, business could come up and say, why should I transform? We're seeing this movement in the United States, other parts of the world where people are saying, well, why are you telling me about diversity, equity, DEI policies? That's not my job, that's government's job. That's pushing back against the policies of this administration for sure. Does that make us a better country? Is that the way to rebuild? South Africa?
Well, there are policies that doesn't have to do with so-called DEI and are very harmful. NHI or employment or expropriation without compensation, for example. You could count those. But let's focus on the ones I think you may have in mind, things like BE or the new employment equity quotas. These are all very harmful. I'm saying that even if your interest is solely the flourishment of black communities, I think black economic empowerment, the policy, and the policy, I mean, not the concept, the policy, and the policy of employment equity as the new quotas are now intending are very harmful, and certainly pushing back against that is in the public interest. I certainly think so.
It depends who's public, because 90% of the 65 million South Africans are black. And if we don't manage our democracy well, the colonizers, oppressors, and racists will come back as investors. And they'll give themselves sexy names like the market. Because why business saves South Africa? For what good end?
maybe for no more than six things. Number one, to help us root out and defeat state capture, because that's where the greatest leak is. Number two, it's so that this economy looks like us. That is called transformation, which is pro many people in the country who are women and many people who are black. Transformation. Because when business creates jobs, it's not an act of charity. They are creating markets of the future. There's a problem when your own employees can't afford the goods and the services that you provide. Number three, we need to demand ethical leadership, because ethics is what you do when nobody's watching. Four, we need good governance, because it's defined in the law, Companies Act, in King 4, now King 5, because people who practice good governance don't steal from the mouths of babies, the sick and the dying, like we did with PPE, when we're at our most try. The penultimate one is service delivery, because that's the job description of politicians. When you call yourself public servant, the definition is in the name. It means you forgo driving a Bentley and you drive a Toyota Tes because you work for the public. And servant, because you serve the people. Because a public servant is not a servant, a person with many servants. Lastly, it's about law and order, safety and security. Because without law and order, safety and security, who are we? So if we are not careful, we'll end up in marriages that are not driven by principles. Because Helen Zeller let the cat out to say, actually, it was business that forced us into a marriage with the ANC. We were told, go and save Ramaphosa. So now business is getting involved in politics. But if you look at what the citizens voted for, 64% of them not only voted for black parties, 64% of them voted for three parties who are all from the same womb, all of them from the ANC. They could have formed a government to make sure that they redress the past imbalances. Now they get into bed with somebody who's opposed to them on everything, who doesn't have a demonstrable track record of working with anybody. They disagree with the ANC on all transformative instruments. They disagree on the Bella Act, ostensibly because they still want to maintain Afrikaans as a medium of exclusion, but also the school governing bodies to determine who comes in and goes out. They disagree with the ANC on employment equity. That's why they're taking them to court, which is supposed to benefit you and I. They disagree on land expropriation without compensation, knowing fully well that the 1913 Land Act was the 10th land expropriation against African people. They disagree on the NHI. Not NHI, because it sounds like a good word. 198 countries that voted this in the United Nations. They call it nicely what it is. It's about universal, equitable access to good healthcare. Who could be possibly against that? So for the next 4.5 years, they'll be taking each other to court rather than focusing on service delivery. Because again, I think it's ZAPU's Joshua Nkomo who says, something that came late to me in my life is that it is possible for a country to obtain its political liberation without its people being free.
Herman Mashaba, you wanted to conclude.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, just to really give you a sense of what that Dr. Mohale has raised, I think these are things that got me into politics because I'm fortunate in the sense that I'm financially independent, that I don't really have any politician or any businessman to corrupt me. No one can corrupt me. I don't need more than what I have. But I'm a capitalist. And my concern, to really bring this issue, and I've just had one interview yesterday and one today, I don't know if they will publish this, that if I look at the political dynamics in my country, I'm actually quite worrying when Helen Zeller is coming to Johannesburg. And I said to the media, I hope they're going to record, and I said to please record what I'm saying, you can quote me, that Helen Zille is not coming to Joburg to save us people of Johannesburg. Sent here by the private sector to ensure that they work with the ANC. For me to ensure that the 35 billion rands of corruption that I was pursuing, it's covered. So she's the only person trusted by business to make sure that that 35 billion rands of fraud and corruption that I was pursuing against senior ANC people involved with big business, it's covered. So she's not here to help people of Johannesburg. They don't want to have another Herman Mashaba who's a cheeky black.
But if I may push back, you were working with business. You gave the stats yourselves of how you, with business,
absolutely,
took over those buildings,
yes,
leased them
absolutely
out to business.
With the,
by now, they should be hugging you and saying, forget about being president, come back to Joburg and do this.
No, I think it's not all business. You see, when I make mention of business, it's not everyone in business is corrupt. Majority of business people are great, and I worked with them when I was in business, and I still do, obviously, through my business interest. My wife is in charge of that. But when I was working in the city of Johannesburg, giving them these buildings in a transparent process, where the only demand, I said, we'll give you a long lease. The only thing what we want from you to deliver is tell us how much we give you this property. Tell us how much you are going to invest. Tell us how many job opportunities you're going to create. Tell us how many units you're going to create, including coming out with a condition that this is not Cape Town. This is Johannesburg. 30% of the units must be for poor people. And I can tell you, we were oversubscribed. So business came to the party. That's why I like business. But I don't obviously subscribe to corrupt business and government relationship. And that is where one of the Kansas insidious issue we're sitting with in this country of this corrupt relationship. And the only way we can actually sort this matter out is to really have to release our criminal justice system. We don't need Advocate Batoyi to be holding prosecution on cases clear as daylight. Guys, just 5 minutes away from here, we can walk to the Gautrain station. You know, this piece of land given away for nothing. The documents which we provided to the National Prosecuting Authority to prosecute. How many years later, they're refusing to prosecute. The Gupta-linked business was given that piece of land, the most precious piece of real estate in this country, given away for nothing. They never paid anything, including being excluded from paying for services like water that the city was providing. I give this all information to the National Prosecuting Authority even up to today. And there's many more. As I said, 35 billion rands of fraud and corruption. And it's not every business. Businesses played a role and really supported our government, because what we do, I created a government that created a fair and equitable environment for everyone. Okay. Fair play.
I've run out of time, which is a terrible thing, because I want to go on for, I could go on for 2 hours. But I'm going to open the floor to questions. Before I do that, I want to ask you all a question that we, Sia, myself, Marina, we've grappled with, and it's all of you are very influential. All of you meet so-called investors every day, and you get a sense of what is needed for this country to attract foreign investment. So how do we do that? How do we attract that foreign investment while protecting our lawmaking, our country, against foreign influence, so that this is us attracting it and making it work for this country?
You attract foreign investment the same way you attract local investment. Foreign investment is a small portion relative to total investment. Most of it is local. And so I think basically don't do everything Mr. Moale said. Those are all bad ideas. You won't have local investment and you won't have foreign investment. That's not to say that... So, yeah, the short version is get back to sound economic policies, reform on BEE, reform on employment equity, don't do expropriation without compensation, don't do NHI, and those are some good starting points. if we push back against this 20 years ago, everybody in this country would have been richer. If we push back against BEE when it was still easy in the early 2000s, I know it was popular back then. It's not, now everybody knows BEE is a mess. 20 years ago, it wasn't so clear. And if we had pushed back against it stronger back then, everybody in the country would have been richer.
Well, let's be back. And also, please give me a flavor of your conclusions, your final conclusion about can business save South Africa and how?
Well, I think business has to be politically active instead of propping up the state. It has to come up and speak politics and say about what's wrong. And it shouldn't take on the responsibility of running failing state assets. It's not its responsibility. It's for the voters to decide, not for the business to decide. So for me, I'm very clear about this. I want the voice of business to be heard. If something is going wrong, they are citizens of South Africa. They should shout about corruption, about mismanagement, about this. But they shouldn't run state assets, because then they are fudging the difference between state property and private property. And that's where, in that gray area that is created, then corruption festers and more incompetence and more inefficiency.
Should Business for South Africa, when they make a decision in November, go in and help the city of Johannesburg?
No. The city of Johannesburg has... I live in Johannesburg and I pay rates. Every month I pay rates. And I want the people who are elected, and I'm an elector in the city of Johannesburg, and I want the people who we elected to take the rates money that I have given them on their promises. Remember, they came to me, said, we can run this. Then I want them to do it. If they are unable to do it, then they can come back to us, the voters, and say, sorry, guys, we're unable to do it. Maybe find somebody else to do it.
Amen, Mashallah.
I think, let me give you my closing remarks before you give the floor to the audience. I think I really wish and pray that, you know, the black voters in this country can embrace the free market economy. Government to be there to create a conducive environment for business to operate. And also, secondly, for black voters in particular, to come out in their numbers and learn not to be married to political parties. They must learn when a political party fails them, they must punish them at the next election. Because the only way politicians have worked with them, the only way they learn...
And you're one of them.
Yeah, no, the only way they learn... The only way they learn, that's when they know they're going to lose their jobs. So, and if ever the voters, black voters can go out, because they don't, go out and vote corrupt, inept government, vote it out. I can tell you next time the next batch of politicians coming in will know that in the event I don't deliver, I'm going to be voted out. But at the same time, I think... we need redress. I think the issue that my friend is talking about, that it is counterproductive. Unfortunately, if we're not going to deal with redress in this country will never go forward. I think black people are not in townships, are not in Soweto or in Amanskraal, in Stinkwater, because they want to be there. They were actually put there by harsh, brutal policies, and you're not going to address this by saying the market forces will address this. We need a political environment that is going to, while business is operating, make sure that we come out with appropriate reparations and really give black people an opportunity not to live in Soweto, where today in Soweto You've got three families, so you've got a grandmother, mother, and the child, and the children living in one homestead because of high unemployment and so forth. So I think for me, I believe in a free market economy. I believe in a democratic system, to which I believe, I hope and pray that black people can embrace and come out in their numbers, so that we can stop business from influencing political decisions. Political decisions must be influenced by the voters.
Professor Mohan?
So the only people that made money in the 31 years of our democracy, on whose behalf we were told it's for us, are the African people, the Jewish people, and the Muslim people, because they've got capital. 31 years into democracy, South Africa's GDP is still $416 billion. It was the same in 2016, which means that all of us have gone backwards. Our discretionary purchasing power and disposable income buys us less today compared to 2016. And I think what we have failed to do as a people, as a country with great natural endowments, is we haven't changed the system that has ensured that you just have to be born black and the chances are you are condemned to live in Alexander. Because up until today, it's impossible for black people to save for a simple reason that they still live on average 40 kilometers away from their places of employment, which then means that they spend 40 minutes one way going to work and coming back. In fact, 70% of their monthly wages or weekly wages goes only to three things. Number one is transport, because it's 40%. If you add food, it's 70%. How then do they save? Because for 31 years, all we had to change was just three things. That Great Britain handed over South Africa to white male Afrikaners to maintain. Number one was, you know, you must always keep South Africa as a crucible of cheap labor forever. Black labor is still cheap. Number two, they must risk it all to the belly of the earth and get this gold, and we will be, I'll have the first right of refusal. Number three, if they are lucky, pick up a few diamonds and we'll set the price. Hence the creation of the London Sales Organization. It doesn't happen anywhere else in the world where you go and labor and then you come to me and say, no, I'll tell you how much to pay for this. Here's my last comment. Everywhere else in the world, racism has only three definitions. Number one, you must inherently believe in your own superiority. Number two, you must have power. Three, you use that power to exclude. Put differently, what is it that black people have excluded white people as a group from doing?
Thank you, gentlemen. I noticed that we didn't have any women on this panel, and that's a terrible sadness. Thank you for all your contributions. There is so much more to go on. But I'm going to start with the gentleman right at the corner there.
So can we get an agreement here, guys? So you're all saying that business can't save South Africa. Is that the kind of, is that the outcome tonight? That even though you've positioned it as such, you all agree that business can't save South Africa. The stuff that Adrian Gore did about 9 months ago when he met with the president, there was a whole bunch of captains of industry. It was this nice post on LinkedIn, how the president is going to meet with all the captains and they're going to solve it. So we all agree tonight it's an absolute waste of time.
I don't think it's a waste of time. I think it
just
depends.
Just business can't save South Africa.
Who is negotiating with? You can imagine expecting a president who puts money under mattresses and you expect us to really believe that nonsense. I mean, already the starting point, it's wrong. I mean, for captains of industry to talk to money launderers, and you expect us as a society to believe that nonsense. I think we need to be respected as South Africans.
Well, can I say that if you look at some of the agreed outcomes of that meeting, load shedding it's not a feature. I wouldn't buy the story that it's totally gone, but it's not the feature that it was 2 years ago. You take someone who bigs himself up, like Leon Schreiber, the Minister of Home Affairs. It seems to me that the visa regime is being shaken up for talented people to come and work here if we need them. It's cheaper to get data for poor people, a little bit cheaper. And some of those are beginning to come through. Don't you think that's something worthwhile?
Illegal immigration is at its worst, and we're not going to plan as government to plan when you don't know how many people to budget for. I mean, you run the city of Johannesburg at the time, 5 million people. In the meantime, there's another 2-3 million, I don't know, and you expected to provide for them. And right now, South Africa, it's a free-for-all when it comes to these criminals who are coming into our country, taking over businesses from our local people, dealing in money laundering, and we think.
But the point has been made here that not all business people are corrupt. Not all foreigners. Some of them are engineers coming to work.
Very same thing. Not all politicians are corrupt.
Fair enough. Mweletsi Mbeki, the question, the answer to that question, are we saying here tonight that really business is not?
No, we're not saying one or the other. Remember, there's a question mark at the end of the question. Can business save South Africa? And we are weighing the pros and cons, and hopefully at the end of this discussion, we may say on balance it can play an important role. No one can save South Africa. I mean, it's our country for all of us. We have to make it work. There is no one person or one institution that can build South Africa. We have many institutions in South Africa, including private companies, including non-profit companies, religious organizations. All of them help to build the country. So there's no one silver bullet that can build South Africa. We all have to activate all the institutions that the people of South Africa have built, including the private sector.
Mm. I'm going to ask that gentleman to now ask his question.
Thank you. My name is Lee Dupree. Bonang, my question is for you. It's around BEE, because you were part of BMF at the time when BEE was implemented. Now, BEE is sometimes seen by business as a compliance burden. What can be done to help shift the way it gets looked at so that it can be seen as a growth opportunity instead? Because I work in the BEE space, and what we see is, in spite of the media narratives that's currently being pushed against BEE, but on the ground, where companies implement BEE effectively and they do it well, can create amazing outcomes and results and successes for that company's bottom line, but also for the intended beneficiaries. So what can be done there? I'm not going to put this question to Mweletsi, because for the last 10 years or more, him and I have already argued about this, so I know where he stands on it. And then, Pitt, to you, I just want to mention something. So BEE gets blamed for everything, including the weather. I just want to make mention that in spite of the media narrative that you guys push about being forced to give ownership away in your business, that's not quite accurate. You don't have to give ownership away.
Okay, I'm going to stop you, Lee, and ask Bonang to answer your question. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So first, let's be clear about definitions. So BEE, it's a planned and positive process and strategy that is aimed at transforming the socioeconomic environments that have excluded individuals from previously disadvantaged groups in order for these individuals to gain access to opportunities, including developmental opportunities based on their suitability. So BEE is pro-black but not anti-white. BEE is there to give these blacks the boots with which they can pull themselves up. BEE says, as business, we need to grow our own timber. Now, growing our own timber, CSIR does a study in 2022 that says there's 1.2 million students in the 26 public universities. But there's a small problem of historical debt. They put that figure at 16.5 billion, 9.2 billion of which is irrecoverable. 2022, 100,000 students have completed their studies but can't graduate because they owe these institutions. Business will be well advised. Instead of fixing Transnet and water reticulation, give these young people hope so that they can reclaim their self-worth and their self-respect. And the math is very simple. There's 400 companies listed on the JSE in 2010. Now it's 298. 1.5 million of them are small and medium enterprises. I exclude micro. 60 of them hold equities in 80 private equity firms. All of them have corporate social investment programs. We don't even ask them to make more profit or to make more money. Just the money they've put aside for CSI, if they put it in one pot, all of them, a measly 1 million rand into a historical debt fund in 1 year would have wiped off the entire 16.5 billion instead of having 800 million, 800 doctors in Gauteng alone who are now depressed because they sold all the cattle in Limpopo for them to have the titles, but they're unemployed.
Bonang, Pete, would you like to have a bite at that question?
Yeah, BEE is about ownership transfer. The loopholes around ownership transfer is not ideal from the point of the proponents of BEE. I think I would be interested in, I presume Mr. Mohale would agree, but if BEE, even if it's a some kind of point scheme around skills development and so on, that's then it's not ideal from the point of BEE. And that's why we've seen over the last 20, 25 years, BEE's codes being escalated, the new BEE Act, with the competition law amendments in 2018, we see sub-minimums being introduced, we see explicit requirements in competition law and so on, all directed toward ownership. So it's true that there are ways to get BEE points without ownership, but the ideal requirement really is ownership. And we can speak about whether that's good or bad, but that is the idea behind BEE.
He doesn't want you to say anything.
I just want to remind all of us, BEE is policy of one political party, which is the ANC. So it is not an obligatory policy for his party. So now, what we are overlooking in this room is that the voters of the ANC have rejected the ANC, including its policy of BEE. So it's not academic. The voters have said, we don't want the ANC. You know who's keeping the ANC in power? The DA. It's the DA that's keeping the ANC in power with policies like BEE. So we shouldn't overlook. If tomorrow the DA withdraws its support for the ANC government will collapse. And its BEE policies will go out of the window. So that will be the end of BEE.
I am quite interested in scenarios with you of the ANC. He spoke about children of the same womb, was it? Yes. And that's the EFF and...
They hate each other. But they hate each other, these children.
That's fair. I'm going to take two last questions because we've run out of time. I'm going to take this gentleman and this young lady here.
My question is to the panel, and I'm not sure whether we did justice to the topic and if we got to some conclusion. And because I thought almost... politicians were blaming business and business was blaming politicians. And we're kind of talking about two sides of the coin. But I think what's important is both business and politicians are important for the country to move forward. And I think we missed that point, because if we don't join hands together as business and politics, we can't move with either or. And I think we've talked about the 9 lost years and the corruption and all of that, but why does that happen? What's the underlying symptom of that? The underlying symptom is that there's no growth. People don't have the money. People have not progressed since 2016. We've gone backwards, actually. And that has got some few people to get richer and claim power. And so we haven't grown the pie in itself. And that's why corruption has taken more shape in the country. So, and who's responsible for that? And we clearly heard from Mr. Mohale that business is in the business of creating jobs and economy and growth, and politics or the government is responsible for creating reforms and the right conducive environment for investments into the country and for business to prosper. So if the country is going spiraling downwards, and if business is seeing an impact on the few jobs that they're creating, why shouldn't business stand up and shout and say, we need, and it's not more to say that we're helping, but it's more to say there. We're trying to solve the problem here. So the question to the panelists is, how can we come together as business and politicians and government to solve the problem that we're in and not blame each other?
Can I just really come in here? I think, and we must not really be naive or be fooled by business saying they are in business to create jobs.
You're in a difficult position because they is business, which you're part of business.
Yes, yes, I'm part of business, but I'm when I'm in business, I'm not in business to employ people. I'm in business to make money. I don't go into business. I think, you know, what I'm saying is we must not be fooled by him and Mashapa saying, you know, what I'm opening this business to employ people. It's none of my business. I'm in business to make money. But in the process of making money, I'm going to employ people. I don't need government to tell me I must look after my staff. How I've been in business for 40 years and I've got some of people who've been under my employment for 35 years or so. It's not because government is asking me to look after them, because I know if I lose these people, my business will collapse. So I don't need government to tell me that. Business needs a government that creates a conducive environment for them to create businesses, because in the process of running profitable businesses, they're going to employ people. But now we tend to really be confused by seeing a president of a country standing with a big businessman talking about jobs that they're going to create. But they're not telling you this man is not his agenda to employ these people. No, this is a political game that businesses are playing to really get government tenders and government concessions and so forth. But ultimately, the business is in the business of making money. And in the process, you need a government that can ensure that they create a fair and equitable playing ground that does not really favor one over the next.
Thank you. You get the last word.
Yes, I'm the only woman that has. Thank you. So I'm Nolithando Duma, and I'm from Umlazi. And we had a conversation with young people in Addis Ababa on Saturday. I think I just wanted to know the view of the panelists about a cancer in our country and in Africa. Everyone's excited, we were sitting with, about their government. Some of them are happy, some aren't. But there's something that's happening that's quiet, but it's really ruining business and our lives. And that is the extortion mafias, which includes the fact that you had to fight with trying to get back Johannesburg. So I just want to know, can business do anything to dismantle these extortion mafias in our country? Because it's really bad, and somehow our government is playing it as if it's not there. But in Guamashu, in KZN, you cannot now have business, do any business. You can't bring big businesses, because then they have to pay. In Bramfontein, apparently, the people are paying, even ShopRite and Pick n Pay are paying these extortion mafias. So I just wanted to hear if business can be able to assist in dismantling this in our country.
Well, I think business can't really have its own police force, cannot have its prosecutors, business cannot have prisons, and so forth. That's the role of government, and I think it's coming out with its latest commission, how our state is actually quite captured by the ANC government, businesses, and so forth. That's why it's important to really have an independent criminal justice system that is outside business, because put business in charge of politics, that's where you're going to see get more corruption and the collapse of the system. I think we need a separation of power. Let business play that role and have a government that can have a very strong criminal justice system, from the police, train your police men and women to ensure that they do proper investigative capacity and with no political interference. Don't really have our national head of MPA, what's her name, Batoyi. Shamila, you don't need people like Shamila Batoyi in charge. You need strong, independent leadership. You don't have to have the Chaukes here. The Chauke in Gauteng. So, and then you need the prisons where you kill or you rape or you steal public monies, you go to prison. We don't need correctional services in this country. We need prisons so that people know you go to prison, you're going to pay back to society. One thing for sure, that one of the biggest weaknesses that personally I feel we have as a country, we embrace this Ubuntu. We've taken it to another level, and that is where our biggest weakness is. We protect criminals more than we actually protect vulnerable South Africans.
Thank you, Mr. Mashaba. It seems to me from your question, thank you, it's such a profound and wonderful question, and we've come to the end of our time. But it seems to me that we have a failing state, and that failing state, it's either you step in as a matter of emergency and try to fix it, or all of us are in this boat where I'm touched by a question, because a young woman I know sells old recycled clothes, and she can't sell them in the village. You mentioned Stengvater. She can sell them in the village New Esteres, where I come from, and not in Stengvater, the next village, because the extortion mafia there says, you must pay us money to sell old clothes in the next village. And so the state, she calls the police, they don't, it's not a crime, so they say. So that's the end of it. So on that note, I'm going to ask you to say a few words about the topic and where we ended up, so that young man at the back doesn't go home depressed.
Okay, well, I want to first to agree with Herman that the job of the government is to do what the people elected to do. And that is there in the Constitution. And it must, if it doesn't do what it is elected to do, we elect another government. In South Africa, the South African voters have elected they have overthrown a previous government, which is the government of the ANC. But there are 10 other parties who are keeping it in power. They are not changing its policies. They are keeping it in power. Luckily, Herman is not part of them, and I have to thank Herman for that. So, because these are the 9 parties that are keeping a party that the voters have said we don't want anymore, are overriding what the voters of South Africa said. And that is, in my view, bad democracy, if we can call it democracy. The future of South Africa, I am very optimistic about the future of South Africa. My family for nearly 200 years has been fighting for change in South Africa. And we have achieved a lot of change. We paid a lot of costs, but we're not crying. We're still fighting. And millions of South African families have done the same. They've made sacrifices and they have changed this country. This country is completely different to what it was 30 years ago. And it will be different from what it is today 30 years from now. So for me, I have a lot of optimism about South Africa. We need to change our electoral system so that the president is elected directly, like the president of America. The premiers are elected directly. The mayors of the metros are elected directly. And that is what is going to make our government and our politicians accountable to the citizens of South Africa and to the people of South Africa. And that's what's going to stop corruption, is accountable government. The proportional representation system, which the ANC has been defending for the last 30 years, has to go. And we have to get members of parliament standing in a constituency, and the people in that constituency elect them. And if they don't deliver on what they were elected on, unelect them and choose somebody else. So these are all the businesses, the unfinished business that we still have to do. And we have to be courageous and energetic and carry on with the unfinished business and stop worrying about the past. We spent too much time in South Africa worrying about the past. Was painful, but we can't change that. Believe you me, I lost many members of my family. My family lost, but we're not sitting there crying about it. We're building the country. Okay, maybe building is too strong a word. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone. Thanks to the panel. Thanks, all of you, for coming. It's been wonderful. And all this will be uploaded in the next few days, and you can go back to it and reflect and take away what you need to take away. Thank you so much for coming today.